Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to episode 61 of The Stare Down, the sports talk and real estate show. I'm super excited to be with my buddies, Bill and Todd. How are you guys? Bill?
I'm doing good, Sean. I'm still recovering from the euphoria of attending a regularly scheduled doubleheader. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Yes, and Todd, how about you? You just got done with a lacrosse tournament, an all-day lacrosse tournament, and then some Italian dinner to top off the belly before a beer with your buddies on the Stare Down. What's going on, Todd?
The only thing you missed was it was a weekend tournament. So I did this yesterday as well. So it was a great long weekend of kids sports and lacrosse. Not to give too much away, but I think we've always talked, it's great to see a group of kids, not necessarily be the best group out there, but gel and improve and get better every time you see them. So good weekend. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, anytime they start improving, they start wanting to go back the next week and improve more, right?
Yes, absolutely.
They don't get frustrated and want to get on their phones.
Yeah, never about the wins and losses, even though that's fun. It's just, you know, how they play together, are they getting better every time? So be better, right? That's one of your mottos, Sean.
And who brought the snacks, right?
That's true.
Hey, can we stop at Chipotle or Chick-fil-A on the way home, right?
Chick-fil-A is usually a pretty good option.
I'm going to really date myself. Does lacrosse have treat tickets?
You're dating yourself. I don't know.
You have no idea what that is, Sean?
I don't know what that means.
Wow. So back in the day, Little League, back in my day, when the game was over, you were handed a treat ticket. And the treat ticket was good for one item at the snack bar.
Ah, very cool.
Afterwards. So, sorry.
No, I like it.
Now the parents have to go on Sign Up Genius and all sign up to who brings drinks and who brings snacks. And there's a science to it, I'll tell you what, because if you bring the drinks, it's usually pretty simple. Gatorades, waters, juice boxes when the kids were little. But as the kids get older, you know, a lot of parents just default to Subway. They go to Subway or pizza. Yeah. But then you get that one kid who's like, please no mayonnaise or mustard on the sandwiches ahead of time. And, you know.
What allergies do you have, perhaps?
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah. It was much easier with a treat ticket because I could get two winner suckers instead of a Chico stick. You guys go Google that stuff. It's worth Googling.
Hey, Bill, real quick, and I'll take up 30 seconds of your time. My parents met when they were like 13 and 12, and they're 80 – almost 81 and 80 and still together. Amazing story. But my dad won in his baseball game the first time they ever hung out together at 13 and 12. He got a free ice cream cone at the local ice cream parlor. His first date asked my mom, hey, you want to come with me? And my mom tells us to this day, he sat there and ate every drop of ice cream and never offered to buy
anything. Wow.
And I go, that's where I get all my Rico Suave moves, huh? Is that it? So
maybe you get that from Joni. You're the crow. You always we used to call Todd the crow in the fraternity house.
Oh, I know what that means. He was finishing up, right?
He was always coming. He would see the pizza guy come and deliver to room 6 or 7 or 8 or whatever. And then about 5 minutes later, he'd knock and he'd say, any crust left? Any crust left? And he used to love getting the bones.
Hey, as the 6 of 6 children, you were either – on time or hungry. So you had to do what you had to do.
That's awesome. Hey guys, let's get into sports because we have a lot to talk about. Man, it was a good week in sports. And there was a lot of activity. There was a lot of things to talk about. There's a lot of stuff I already talked about. But let's start in baseball. We're kind of in that – coming up on the summer solstice. And we're going to be in a matter of 8 days, basketball is going to be done and hockey is going to be done. Hockey could be done tonight. And then baseball is going to take center stage. But, Bill, I want you to start and tell us about your occurrence yesterday and tell us why it's so rare that there is a scheduled doubleheader and the opportunity you had to go visit your hometown Devil Rays.
Just the Tampa Rays now. They took the Devil out, yeah.
They'll always be the Devil Rays to
Devil
us.
Rays, yeah. Tampa Bay Devil Rays. It flowed. Yeah, so it had been on the schedule since the opening and the schedule first came out. The owner, Stu Sternberg, had just said, you know, I love doubleheaders as a kid. He grew up in New York. He would go to Mets doubleheaders. I thought about it, and the more I thought about it, I go, it's been a while. And sure enough, looking back in time, it was 2011, the last regularly scheduled doubleheader. And before that, it was 1996. So you're talking 21 years, they've had two scheduled, regularly scheduled doubleheaders. So that for me made it just real exciting. The reason they don't do them is obviously it's money. It's pure money. You lose parking. You lose a whole bunch of other things that you don't get. In fact, you lose all the ticket revenue because it was one ticket paid for both events. We did them at the Padres back in the late 80s and into the early 90s. Then they kind of went away. The biggest complaint for doubleheaders today comes from players. Mm. And this is frustrating, right? Because here you've got these guys that are, look, I get it that it's a grind, 162 games, but they've never been more coddled than they are today. They've never been in better shape than they are today. Yet I read a great article in our Sunday paper here today that Ernie Banks, famous for saying it's a beautiful day, let's play two, played in 300 doubleheaders.
Wow.
As a Cub. And 19 of those doubleheaders were back-to-back. Mm. And four times he played four consecutive doubleheaders.
Wow.
And you got guys, you got Logan Morrison. Look, he's having a great year this year, but he's been kind of a bust, calling it the stupidest thing he's ever seen. And you're just like, really, Logan, you can't just go out there and play for two games and just, you know, once a year. So that was kind of frustrating for some of the fans, especially when that came out in the paper today. But a couple of cool things, I'll get off the subject. Number one, first pitch of the first game, Bill Spaceman Lee. Awesome.
Very cool.
Expos and Red Sox and just the craziest guy out there, still playing in men's fast pitch league at the age of 71. Wow. And probably still dusting people off the plate. So, you know, he was a crack up seeing him. Something else I saw, like, cause I've been to over 1,000 Major League Baseball games, right? Mm. Working in the industry, I've been to a lot of baseball games, and I've never seen, I watch the umpires closely. I had a relationship with the umpires. We used the same golf courses for golf when I was there, and I knew a lot of them for ticket issues. And I noticed an umpire behind the plate. His name is Laz Diaz. I'd never seen him before, but he was very into the game, right? He's like kicking stuff off the plate. He's talking to the players. He's just a different kind of a guy. And I'm like, well, that's cool. He's got this. He'll be at third base for the second game. Well, the second game starts and Laz ain't on the field. He's not there. And I'm what happened? And sure enough, this morning in the paper, it says that in 2000, Major League Baseball instituted a new rule. If they know there's going to be a doubleheader, a makeup for a rainout or a day-night split doubleheader now they have with two separate gates, they will bring a fifth umpire in. They'll call up someone from the minors, basically. And the home plate umpire does the first game, then he goes. He goes back to the hotel because it's such a drain mentally to work the plate, trying to work two games in one day. They didn't want to do that anymore. So they brought this other guy in, and I didn't realize that. So I learned something new, that Laz Diaz kind of didn't have to do game two. So that was kind of interesting.
That's awesome. Hey, let me call a quick time out of our baseball talk. Are you guys watching the start of the hockey game on NBC?
I'm going to put it on right now.
So Nashville has – if you've been to Nashville, Broadway is kind of the main strip with all the bars and the honky-tonks, and then the Bridgestone Arena is right there. They have completely filled it and closed it down. There's, I don't know, I'm going to guess, you know, 30,000 people. Luke Bryan is doing a live concert on top of Tootsie's right now, and they're showing it like from above, and it is unbelievable what you're seeing right there on the TV. And Luke Bryan is now hanging over the edge of Tootsie's, screaming down at the fans down below. So what a cool atmosphere. And there's probably more people there on a street than there was in the stadium, Bill, for your game yesterday, right? What was the announced attendance?
17,750.
And that's attendance for the...
Yeah, that's the attendance for the game, for the doubleheader. And so by the time I left in the seventh or eighth inning of the second game, there might have been 5,000 people there.
Okay.
It was a long day, right? And they were hoping to pull 20,000 in. Tickets were slightly more expensive. They didn't keep them the same price as a regular game. They were a little bit – they bumped them up by a few bucks. But, you know, it definitely wasn't a moneymaker, and that's why you just won't see doubleheaders. Regardless of what the players say, it's the owners who control that, and they do not want to do that. I know that the Rays had to get waivers, not only from the Rays, or, you know, their own team had to sign off on it, the player personnel people, but the A's had to sign off on it. MLB had to sign off on it. Everybody, it was an ordeal just to kind of get this thing approved for the season. So
let me ask you this. Do they do one national anthem? Do they do – it's treated as one event?
That's a great question. Yeah, it's one event. No, there's one national anthem at the beginning. They announced it just like they did in the past. The game ended, and they said in 45 minutes at 6:50, the next game will start. And then we waited 45 minutes, and I'm watching the guys redo the field. They had a banner parade in the outfield. They let the fans who made banners could walk them in the warning track around the stadium. And that was something the Mets did, and the owner had seen that and wanted to bring it back. And anyone who walked a banner got to two tickets to a future Rays game.
That's so cool.
It was really super fan friendly. They did a great job. No second national anthem. They just announced the players. They came out and we got started because it's all part of the same day. So
now in most baseball stadiums, they stop selling beer after the top of the eighth inning. What do they do in the case of a doubleheader?
You could buy beer from the 12:10 when the stadium opened until the seventh inning of the second game.
Wow.
Yeah. I like how that's your question. That's awesome.
So, Bill, by the end of the second game, it was like friends and family night there.
I was going to say pretty 5,000. Yeah, it was pretty light. I mean, it was rough, but still, just a great time. I think the Rays will try and do that annually. I think they're going to – and it was a wraparound series. It was perfect. It was a Friday through Monday. You know, every now and then you get those weird four-game series that go Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Well, now both teams have Monday off. They took care of that.
Travel day, right?
And there's goofy fans that did this. They saw four Rays games in 48 hours because they went Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And that's just kind of a cool thing to say.
Yeah, right?
Well, yeah. So
Bill, you mentioned – go ahead, Sean.
No. Do you pick up on the thread?
So you mentioned – is it Lance Diaz?
Laz Diaz, I think, yeah. Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, Google him. I think – and local boy Chipper Jones. I think they have history. I think they have a lot of history. I remember Country Joe West, right? Not a lot of umpires stick out. When you said that name, Google it. It's interesting. Good. And going back to the rarity of the doubleheader, my dad talks, one of his favorite players of all times was Bob Feller, right, a pitcher. He said not only were doubleheaders rare, but starting pitchers used to pitch back-to-back starts in a doubleheader.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about times changing, right?
Oh, yeah.
This one guy for the Rays called the stupidest thing ever. You had pitchers going, 18 innings in one day.
Right. Satchel Paige is infamous for that, right? Satchel Paige wins in doubleheaders multiple times in both games. It was really amazing what they were doing.
There's a reason they don't do it now, but it's amazing to think they used to do that.
Sure. Yeah, those shoulders are way more valuable, I guess, than they were back in the day, I guess. And so they don't do that kind of stuff. You mentioned Bob Feller. Now we're in baseball. Let me just real quick, my favorite, I have a Bob Feller story. I'm working at the Padres. I'm in the ticket office, 92 All-Star game. One of the women that worked for me in the office comes up and she's all, I've got this guy on the phone that needs tickets for the game, but I don't know who he is. And I said, well, who is he? What did she say? She goes, it's Bob Feller. I go, put him through. So I get Bob on the phone. We have this great conversation. He actually comes to Qualcomm to pick up the tickets. And so it was just a great moment for me to meet Bob Feller. And then I go to that year I went to Cooperstown. Raleigh Fingers was being inducted, but so was Tom Seaver. So it was packed with Mets fans. But because I worked for baseball, I had inside access. I was, in the VIP section up front, and all the Mets fans are behind the snow fence. And who walks by but Bob Feller? Hey, Bob, Bill Risser. And he's like, good to see you.
That's awesome.
I'm getting a picture with Bob. I still have it. It's autographed, it was just – so I was really happy that lady didn't know who Bob Feller was, right?
He pitched for the Indians, right? The majority of his
– I think
his whole career.
Yeah.
And you'll know. You guys know better than I will. And my dad claims that he lost the sweet spot in his career due to the war, right?
He fought in the war. A lot of guys did.
Well, he started, I think, when he was 16. I think he started for the Indians when he was 16 or 17.
I think you're right.
My dad swears he would have been the greatest pitcher of all time, but due to his service in the war, he lost some valuable years. For whatever reason, my dad's from upstate New York. For whatever reason, he's a huge Bob Feller fan, and I'm glad you had that story, Bill. That's good stuff.
Well, that's because I believe even back then, Buffalo was the farm club for the Indians.
That could be it, yeah.
But they're now it's now the Columbus team, but – I believe Feller started when he was either 16 or 17 years old as a major league pitcher.
Yeah, I think you're right. Very early. Yep.
Yeah. So that's awesome that you hear about that doubleheader. So next time we see a doubleheader, it's probably a makeup game where they're just trying to get him out of town. It's a West Coast, East Coast type thing, right? Where they're trying to save.
Or it's a 1 o'clock start and a 7 o'clock start, and they empty the ballpark and they bring another crowd in. They'll have those. Yeah. Day night.
So I'm eating dinner with Jenny tonight, and her dad turned 75 this year, and they're going to be in Boston July 15th and 16th. And we looked online, and on the 16th, which is Sunday, there's a 105 game, which is a makeup for Moreno, and then the 805 Sunday night ESPN game of the week.
Yeah.
So it's so funny this came up, but
But you got to buy two tickets for that bad boy. It's no BOGO.
Right. It's
no
separate game. You get one. Separate game. You're exactly right. Yeah. Exactly
that's right. Cool.
So let's talk about I sent you guys a text today saying we got to talk about this kid, Aaron Judge, right fielder for the Yankees.
He's pretty good, right?
Just absolutely on a tear right now with his batting. Just hit his 20th and 21st home runs today.
Mm.
And his 20th is being called the longest home run since they've been measuring home runs.
I heard second longest.
Second longest, okay.
Giancarlo Stanton was 504 and his 495.
Okay, then ESPN's headline was maybe wrong.
Premature.
Yes.
Hey, pardon my ignorance, is he a lefty or a righty?
He's right-handed at the plate.
Right-handed.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Right-handed and just raking right now. 496 was his shot. So you're right. I do remember Giancarlo Stanton had one last year in the fives.
Right.
That upper peninsula of that Marlins Stadium.
Right.
Which was crazy. But, boy, the Red Sox, you know, we kind of recapped last week about the run differential for Houston. The Yankees now are a differential of 115 runs.
Wow.
And remember we talked a lot, Bill, early last year about the Cubs, you know, and their
big differential. Yeah.
They were just cruising to a run differential. And if you look at the Cubs right now, they're plus two.
Wow.
Plus two. And you know, you think about the Yankees being 115 more runs than their opponents. Really, there was a stat on ESPN last night kind of comparing the first, Houston's played 63. Last night they played 63 games to the Cubs, and they were exactly like almost mirror image. Houston had a little better batting average, and Houston had like two extra runs than the Cubs did at this point last year.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Setting up for a pretty interesting thing. Anything else in baseball this week? One non-baseball story, but it happened on the baseball diamond. Todd, have you seen what the Braves are doing now? It's kind of one of their little they don't have the president's races like they do at the Nationals games. Do you know what they do on the morning track during the game? Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it. I'm afraid to guess with Braves being the their mascot. Well, what are they doing, Sean?
So they have it's a race out, and it starts on the left field foul line.
Is Jimmy Carter involved, I hope? Or?
No. And they have a I don't know what his name is. He's just he's wearing a onesie and a mask. I think they call him the Flash or something like that. Well,
sure.
Whoever the contestant is gets like a 200-yard head start, and he just starts racing around from the left foul pole to the right foul pole.
Right.
And then when he gets to almost to center field, just a little bit left center, they start this other guy who's this fast runner, obviously. And he, you know, they race to the other line, and this guy was winning, and he was about 20 steps from the end, and he started raising his hands thinking he won, and the guy passed him. And as he turned to see the guy pass him, he just takes a head first shot. It's fantastic. You can find it on – if you search on Twitter, I think it's like the best thing in baseball this week or whatever. We'll tweet it out from Bill. What's the Twitter handle?
So our new Twitter handle, anyone listening, looking to pick that up, make sure you go follow the Stare Down Cast, at Stare Down Cast. Obviously, somebody had the Stare Down and Stare Down, but Stare Down Cast is the new place to find all the stuff that we'll be tweeting about throughout the week.
And you'll see us on there, obviously, as the cast of the Stare Down. You'll see us on there as well, at
Absolutely.
Tom Meininger, at Bill Rizzo, and at Sean Karp. Hey, let's
see what you did there, Sean.
You see what I did there? That was a nice segue. Hey, let's talk about tennis.
Oof.
Bill, I'm gonna turn it over to you. I want you to start with yesterday's really historic victory by a first-time unseeded player from a small country called Latvia.
Yeah.
Tell us what happened in the
first ever major winner,
unseeded.
Yeah. Ostapenko against Halep. So it'd been 80-plus years since somebody unseeded had won a major. So think about that. It was back in the 20s or 30s. And so in the 30s. Really and just, I like to talk about, not from Ostapenko's 20, she just turned 20 3 days ago during the tournament. So she's just on, you know, cloud nine. But the crushing part is Halep, who with a win, and she was heavily favored and really had leads in the second and third set that Ostapenko came back on her. If she'd have won that, not only does she win her first major, but she also becomes number one in the world. And so she was crushed afterwards. That was, once again, you know, Bill's, I don't know what that means about me, but it means I'm always worried about the people that just get destroyed in a sporting event as opposed to the joy that happens for others.
So, well, not for the Falcons, by the way. You didn't care about the Falcons, but that's
not
okay.
not to be a Monday morning tennis quarterback. But, you know, Bill, if you can't beat an unranked Latvian, you don't deserve to be number one in the world.
Wow, well, that was a weird kind of a slam, but I like it.
I was going to jump in, Sean, when she saw that draw, like going into that final, she's got to be like, this is the best opportunity I've ever had in my life.
Well, Kerber loses in the first round. Serena's pregnant. We talked about that last week.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew early on that it was going to be a first-time major winner. We just didn't know it was going to be a first-time major winner that just turned 20 from Latvia.
And was unranked.
Yeah, so Bill, I got to think this is the equivalent of like a Ben Curtis winning the British Open or a Todd Hamilton.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sean McKeel.
Yep.
I mean, this is a one-hit wonder.
Yep.
Now, she's a young age at women's tennis. She could become a name, but
you know, this, if you go back in time in tennis, this being a young major champion winner happened all the time. Tracy Austin was young. I mean, there were a lot.
20 is not that young, by the way, in women's tennis.
Well,
historically.
Historically, I mean, you had a lot of teenagers winning their first events.
Yep.
The problem is not what you want to call it. Yeah, then the Williams sisters come along and they just changed the game. And now the fitness level's up there, and the champions are definitely a little bit older. They're sticking around. They're in better shape, men's side as well. So, but it, you know, that was definitely a nice touch to see that yesterday. And it brings a great conversation, and we'll see how she does at Wimbledon. You know, maybe she's a clay specialist. We'll see. But
yep,
that was fun. And today,
speaking of clay specialists, yeah,
nice segue.
Let's talk about what happened today, because
3-2-1
is that his eighth?
Tenth. La decima.
Unbelievable.
And one loss against Söderling occurred. I heard it today. There was a real family struggle going on. I'm not sure if it was a divorce.
2012, 2013?
Yeah. No, it was about 6 years ago. They said, 11.
Okay, 11.
Yeah, so he lost early, and he had a family thing going on, and it really affected his game. And then he was out with an injury last year. So, I mean, it was, 10. And to see what the French, you know, Tennis Federation did you watch the end of that match, either one of you?
No.
So I've never seen this before, but they bring out their stage, and the French are very pompous about their stage. They take a while to set up for you have like two commercial breaks before they give away the trophy. But
French?
And they set up this beautiful stage, and then there was this, they had a number 10 with the Roland Garros, you know, French Open symbol for the zero and the 10 as part of the stage. And then they had these banners unfurl in the top of the stadium that said number 10, Rafa, whatever, and a picture of the cup. I mean, they were ready. And this stuff had to be done before the event started. And then thinking maybe we're going to get number 10 and then you could quickly just not do it if he ended up losing.
Put in the vault for next
year. Put in the vault year. So it was great. Wawrinka has beaten Nadal before, but it was in Australia. It might have been not a fully healthy Nadal, but you know, I really felt that this was going to be as I felt straight sets when I watched what Nadal did to Dominic Thiem on Friday, because that kid beat Nadal in Rome, and he's the second best clay court player in the world right now. He's really good, and he beat Nadal. And so when Nadal straight setted him like he was nothing on Friday, you could tell this is where we were headed. Todd?
I mean, yeah, Bill, I'm a big tennis guy, but I think I like to play tennis more than I like to follow tennis.
Okay.
I follow, but not as much as you do. So we're in the era of, I would think, we're talking men's tennis. You ask anyone, they'd say hands down Roger Federer. Greatest tennis player of all time. Certainly at this
18
era,
majors is pretty hard. It's hard to 18 major titles. Yeah, he's the best.
And you got a guy named Rafa who dominates the clay court and has won 10 French Opens. I mean,
and 15 majors himself.
And a guy named Joker who's doing pretty good himself. I mean, is this the greatest era It's hard to compare eras, but
yeah, I mean, if you talk to my wife, who is, you know, I just kind of get the tennis osmosis, you know, through osmosis from Cindy. But to go back to think about when you had McEnroe and Connors and Becker and Borg. I mean, that was some really good tennis, and that was that was pretty amazing stuff.
And but I think Borg won 5 Wimbledons, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But Rafa's won 10 French Opens.
Oh yeah.
It's funny. It's your era, Bill. You can add in some of these outskirt people that were like the others, like the Fred Couples and the Davis Loves. Like when you talk about like Jim Courier.
Yeah.
And Patrick Cash.
Michael Chang. Ely Nastassi. Right. There's a lot of characters that were playing back in the day. Chang was amazing at the French, right? He won 1 or 2 and just had a motor that wouldn't quit, right?
Agassi, you know?
Oh, yeah, and Agassi with his late comeback. So, yeah, it's cool. We don't have that dominant American like we, you know, always we had Connors or we had McEnroe, but and Sampras, obviously. We can't forget Pete. But he was kind of like that transition between, you know, where we are now and that group I was talking about. You had Sampras in the middle running off 14, I think, 13 or 14.
Yeah. Who's our best American right now, Bill?
Nerds, no, Esner. Jack Sock isn't bad. I know these names don't really mean much, right?
No, Jack Sock, he's a good player. Famous for, and Sean, I don't know if you know this, he's famous for, they'll call a ball out and he'll be like, no, it's in. And he'll walk to their side and he'll concede points, right? I mean, you can Google that. People love him. He's like, hey, dude, it was in. I'm sorry.
And he won the doubles yesterday.
Are the Bryan brothers still relevant?
Yeah, Yeah, they're not as dominant as they once were, just getting older. And
God, they were amazing.
They would just run through doubles tournaments. Yeah.
That's funny. And so, Bill, the thing I was going to mention is, and Todd, you sort of alluded to the Federer, you know, Rafa Nadal is kind of like the Phil Mickelson being born in the wrong time, right? I mean, you've got Federer, who is kind of the Tiger Woods role, you know, and Mickelson, just kind of that great player, total respect of all his peers and fans. But just never going to take that mantle of, you know, like you said, if you ask 100 people right now on the streets, name the best tennis player, I think Federer comes out of people's mouths first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, tennis is weird because of the surfaces, right, Bill? I mean, you have clay, you have grass, you have hard courts.
True court. There's all kinds of different, even the hard courts differ.
And certainly Nadal's a clay court specialist, right? Where Federer's a little more well-rounded.
Well, he only won one French. He couldn't beat Nadal on clay. So,
right. That's an interesting argument.
Right. Yeah. So it's hard to tell exactly. But Nadal's 31. Is it possible he picks up another French and wins another one or two other majors and gets to 18? It's not impossible. But the last time I had I was rooting for somebody to catch another guy in majors, it didn't go very well. Yeah. Yeah, he hasn't won one in 10 years. So.
Yep. All right, which way do we turn? Todd, you want to hit soccer early? Let's get to soccer early because we're going to finish with hockey and then basketball.
I would love to hit soccer early. Actually, in 7 minutes, there's a U.S. men's national team qualifying match. We're playing Mexico in Mexico.
Ooh, that's big.
And our record there is atrocious.
Not I think good.
We have one draw in the last 30 games, right? So here's the cool thing is we had a must win on Thursday. We played Trinidad and Tobago, or Tobago, I'm not sure which, and we won. But the fun, kind of exciting thing is you got the crafty veteran Tim Howard at goalie. He's old in soccer terms, but goalies can be a little older. But we have a kid named Christian Pulziak, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his last name. Sean, you know me. I'm great at butchering names. Bill, in your limited stint with me, I'm sure you can pick that up.
Nah.
He is 18 years old, this kid. 18. Wow. He's been on the team since he's 17. He's playing in Das Bundesliga, which is the German Premier Soccer League, playing for Bayern Munich. So he's starting for a German Premier League team. He scored 2 goals. He is the future of men's soccer, unless something happens. But, again, in between the Nashville Predators game, in between the Detroit-Boston game on ESPN, flip over and watch. There's no more highly contested game than U.S. in Mexico. It is a rivalry. We do not do well there. And we don't. It's not a must-win. Thursday was a must-win against Trinidad and Tobago, but it would be great to get some points in Guatemala City, if I believe that's the correct place.
Hey, before we get to the two big sports, I digress. I want to talk about a couple other things that happened this week in college sports. First, it ended quickly, but on Monday and Tuesday night, the Gators and the Oklahoma Sooners women's softball championship happened. And the longest game in championship series history happened. I started watching the game one between Florida and Oklahoma being played in Oklahoma City. I watched it the first inning at the bar near gate B28 in the Denver airport. I texted you guys, letting you know I was getting on the plane.
Yeah.
I took my 3.5-hour flight from Denver to Columbus, got off the plane and saw a few texts from you guys talking about the game. It was in the 12th inning at the time. Ended up going 17 innings and Oklahoma won it on a moonbeam home run, three-run homer. Gators came back and scored one in the bottom of the 17th, and had the tying run on base and the winning run at the plate and ended up getting out. And then Oklahoma came back and won a kind of a thrilling game the next night too to claim their second championship in the last 2 years. That was the Gators' fifth visit to the championship series. What do you guys think of that action with the women's softball?
I'll start, Sean. I loved it. I didn't realize how much I liked that sport until you sit down and watch it. I mean, I just thought it's well played, well coached, very athletic players. The fact that they played 2+ games, and you know those kids, girls, whatever you want to call them, they're battling. I mean, the Gators wanted it as bad as Oklahoma, and they got the best of it and tip their hat. Is that back to back for Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, back to back.
Yep.
Florida's had back to back. It would have been nice to get one in, but no shame at loss. Would love to have had a game three. That would have been really exciting, but just really impressed on the level of competition and the skill that those girls possess. I mean, just unbelievable.
No, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the sad thing is, we all get involved when it's the World Series or the championship series, right? But we don't watch a whole lot of girls softball during the season. So we are seeing at the highest level. These are the two best teams in the country. They made it through the gauntlet that is the playoffs and the regionals and all that stuff that they do. But man, I've told my wife this for years. I'll watch the World Championship of Tiddlywinks because one's going to win and one's going to lose.
Right.
And that's exactly what we had there. We had these amazing athletes, as you mentioned, Todd, giving everything, leaving everything on the field. And it was a lot of fun. The tension, the drama. We've said this a million times on the podcast. There's no reality TV show out there that compares to sports, period.
No,
I do not care. It's the ultimate reality.
It is so interesting how scientific, I guess, and how smart the girls have to be. If you watch really what happens is the coach will call the pitch. The softball girl will open up like a little book on her thing, and then the catcher makes sure the infielders – no, because based on which pitch is coming, they can anticipate whether it's going to be a ground ball, you know, left or right.
Yep.
And it's so cool. It's so hard to advance runners because the outfielders, you know, it's just a smaller diamond. You know, the ball gets to the warning track quickly. It is just so intense. But these girls just battle. And the way they can – the pitchers don't really wear down because they throw that underhanded pitch. And so, you know, they'll sometimes throw 120, 130 pitches.
Yeah.
You know, the rules are a little bit different, but just a lot of fun to watch, and it was exciting. Todd?
Well, it's so calculated, too. I mean, I remember Florida was down, and this is in maybe the seventh inning, and it ended up going, you know, 16-17, and their outfitters were playing back. And I remember we hit a kind of a flare, and it bounced in front. You're like, why are they playing so deep? And the philosophy is, you know, if you're playing shallow and someone burns you, or maybe it was opposite. Maybe
it was opposite. Yeah. I thought the girl was playing too shallow.
Yeah, you're right. So it's the philosophy of, you know, if I'm playing shallow and someone burns me, then they got a good hold of it. But I'm playing deep, you know, do you want a flare to drop in front of you? So there's a lot that goes on. And that's why the managers are calling every pitch. What alluded to what Bill talked about before about the beauty of sports is, and Sean, again, me with names, our left-handed pitcher, who pitched
Barnhill.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever seen anyone just positive? I mean, we're down 3-1. She's smiling. She's pitching. She's grinding. And then when the dust settled and we'd lost, she's crying, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty and why you love sports. I mean, she's battling. And when it's over, it's over. And, I mean, who knew softball with as many sports as we love to watch? Who knew that all three of us would be texting on a Tuesday night or Monday night. I forget what night it was. Yeah. You guys watching this? Oh my God, it's so good. So
yeah.
And you know, also the men's super regionals are finishing up. We've got three teams now have already advanced. We've got a lot of weather happening in Florida that's causing some delays there. Hard to believe that the Florida Gators, who spent some time as number one team this year, they're, I believe, currently number three in the country. Last night was their first walk-off victory of the season. And that just seems so hard to believe that a team that's that good has no walk-offs all season. They had 23 strikeouts of the Wake Forest team, 33 outs, 23 strikeouts. I mean, that is unbelievable. And that's through three pitchers.
No walk-offs because we're dominating, maybe? I mean, you don't need a walk-off if you're leading ahead. I don't know. But, yeah,
it's not like the record was 40-2. I mean, you know, it just seems like some of those wins would be come from behind or, you know, but.
I have a great story real quick about walk-offs. Did you hear the reporter ask Dave Roberts of the Dodgers this question? He said, hey, Dave, I noticed, like, all your walk-offs have happened at home. And Dave Roberts said,
Did they have to?
It's hard to have a walk-off on the road.
That's awesome.
He was a Padre too, wasn't he, Bill?
Back in the day, way, way, way back. Yeah.
Say so, hey, one more college story. I just want to get your guys' opinions. Last week, Bob Stoops retired. Kind of came out of the blue. Arguably, you know, you could argue Barry Switzer was the best Oklahoma coach, but then you can also argue, you know, before him, Bud.
What's his name? Wilkerson.
Wilkerson, yeah. But that's a pretty good run of coaches. What do you think of Stoops' retirement? Bill, let's start with you.
I just, you know, my first thought is, I guess it's the negative side of this, but why? I mean, things are going great. The team is always competitive. Is there something else going on? Is it a Urban Meyer kind of a thing? I don't know. It just felt kind of weird to me. But having said that, I mean, maybe he's come to the point in his life where he's like, this is it. I'm done. I want to enjoy what I've got left. And mm-hmm. Look, these coaches are set for life nowadays, right? If you run through one or two of those contracts. And so I guess good for him if he's doing what he wants to do and spend more time with his family. I hope that's what he does.
Todd?
Two stories. One I heard today on the radio, and one, Sean, you'll remember from yesteryear. So I heard on the radio today, Bob Stoops, I believe, is 58.
That's about right.
His daddy, he comes from a long line of coaching. His brother, Mark's the head coach of Kentucky. I think his other brother was his offensive coordinator years ago. Anyway, long line of – his daddy died at 56 of a heart attack coaching. So from what I heard is he loved the game, but that kind of affected him. He didn't – you know, maybe I'm thinking he wants to get out when the getting's good. And his brother Mark even said he's not the kind of guy that's going to take 6 months off and try to get another job. He was convinced his brother's done.
Interesting.
So that was interesting. So, Sean, one of my favorite stories of all time, and Bill, in the 90s, Florida ran really good against Tennessee, right? Peyton Manning never beat us. Sean and I can – we'll always talk about that.
I've only heard you say that like 37 times.
Right. So we ran really well. Sean, how many times we beat him in a row? Whatever. I mean, 14 times, 12 out of 14. I mean, great run. So one time it was Tennessee week, and Stoops will tell the story. He went over to Coach Spurrier's beach house in Crescent Beach, Florida. Mm-hmm. It's east and I think a little south, Bill, of Gainesville, Crescent Beach. And they were both sitting in an inner tube in the ocean, and Coach Spurrier looked at Bob, Coach Stoops, and said, I bet those Tennessee coaches aren't floating on a raft in the water right now, are they? And that's so typical Spurrier. And Stoops talks about that story. And I guess it's you do what you can, you coach what you can, but you can stay up all night, worry about every detail. At some point, you just got to float on a raft in the water and enjoy life. So that's one of my
that's awesome.
Stoops stories.
Yeah. And I saw a across the ESPN crawl. It was just a quote from Spurrier, you know, who was obviously one of Stoops' mentors, and he just says he's. He's happy with his decision, and he's just ready to see what life brings for him. He's going to be a special consultant to the athletic director, Joe Castiglione, at Oklahoma, much like Spurrier is kind of in Gainesville. I think his meal tickets are paid for in Oklahoma, let's just say that.
His wife loves Norman for whatever reason. They're staying put.
Brought him a championship. You know, Norman is a suburb of Oklahoma City, so it's not like it's some little cow town out of nowhere.
I didn't know that.
Logan Riley is the new coach. 33 years old, youngest coach in all of college football. Not a bad spot to come into, but it's always hard to follow a legend. We'll see how he does. They got a big game in Columbus, beginning of the season.
How long was he on the staff with Stoops prior to?
I believe 3 years.
Okay.
Last 2 years as offense coordinator. Okay. Baker Mayfield back as a quarterback this year, so we'll see how they do. But like I said, tough game in Columbus, second week of the season.
Oof. And okay. Switzer, I heard Switzer was talking about Logan Riley. He said he's a special guy. Like, he's 33, but the second he walked on the campus, you knew he was destined for great things. I don't know if Switzer's hyping him up or what, but he was not surprised that he's tapped to take over. Cool. So, and if it wasn't here, you would have gone somewhere else for a head coaching job.
Good. Well, guys, let's talk about hockey. We're in game six right now as we're recording this. Game six is happening in Nashville. The home team has won every game so far, and the home team is the first series, I think, in Stanley Cup history that the winning team has scored at least 4 goals in every game. And the home team has been the winning team in every game. I also saw a stat going into tonight's game that the last 4 times the Stanley Cup has been 3-2, the team with the lead has won it. So that favors Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh also is 4-0 in clinching Stanley Cup games on the road. So we'll see if that holds true. But what's been your take on the hockey action with the blue blood Pittsburgh Penguins and the upstart really fun Smashville Predators? Kyle, let's start with you.
I'm rooting for Nashville. I don't think it's it just seems like a fun, the up-and-comer. I know some people from Pittsburgh. I don't hate them for backing them and loving their team, but obviously I want Nashville to win tonight. I'd love a game 7. I'd love for them to win it all. Just what a fun atmosphere, party, country music, backs them up. It's just fun. I am in on the hype and sold by the vibe. So I'm rooting for Nashville. From a hockey point of view, I think Pittsburgh's a better team. Obviously they won 5-6-0 the other night, on Thursday. So my brain says Pittsburgh, but my heart, and for the love of the game and for it to be fun, says go Nashville.
And yeah, for me as a casual hockey fan, you know, the thing that is most fun for me to watch in this Stanley Cup series is really just Rene and Murray, those two goalies.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I know, you know, Rene had a bad game. They got him out of there. And I get why you do that, right? They pulled him out the first intermission and said, just have a seat. Just relax. We're going to need you big time in game 6. I mean, they were already down 3-0, I think, at that point. So let him have his rest. But this kid, Murray, with the Pens, are you kidding me, right? He's I guess he's still considered a rookie this year. He played a little bit in the Cup last year, I think. But this is his rookie season, so to speak, and he's been playing well. It's been fun. And then for me, just to kind of see the little side stories, right? Sidney Crosby, who, you know, was supposed to be the next greatest player, and he's doing all kinds of great stuff. The interplay between guys like Subban and Malkin, and that stuff is just a lot of fun for a casual fan.
It is, yeah.
But you know, I'll never give this up. I never root for any Pittsburgh team for any reason anywhere ever in my entire life.
They're like your Tennessee. They're like our Tennessee.
Ever, yeah. Exactly.
And until you move to Pittsburgh, and then you have to root for the home team.
I'm never moving to Pittsburgh. Mark my words.
All right, so we'll see what happens next week. Either way, when we come on for episode 62. We will be talking about who hoisted the Stanley Cup, and always tonight I'll watch until the end, because if Pittsburgh is leading, you know, either way, you'll watch the whole game tonight just to see what could happen. And then certainly, hopefully maybe on Tuesday night, we'll get a chance to see a game 7, because there is nothing better than game 7, especially in a Stanley Cup.
Where there's one thing better. Overtime in a game 7.
That's right. I was going to say the golden goal is you know, where as the puck goes in, the skate, the gloves and the sticks are in the air, you know, and to watch the guys come over the and then the handshake line is just
handshake. I was going to say the great, one of the best traditions in sports is that after series handshake.
So let's segue to NBA. When we talked last week, we were getting ready to start game two, and it turned out to be another, you know, beat down by Golden State. Come back to Cleveland for game three. Let's start there, because Cleveland for pretty much 58 minutes was the better team. Golden State was tight. The big three of Cleveland was strong. And then, gosh, with 2 minutes and 28 seconds to go or whatever, with a 7-point lead, Cleveland never scored again, and they lost by five. What happened? Knowing what you know now, with game four going to the Cavs, we could have had a 2-2 series right now.
Yeah.
And instead, we still have a series that's 3-1, and it still feels, I think, for the non-Cleveland fan, feels like it's over, right? I mean, yeah. It feels like the inevitable is going to happen, maybe, knock on wood, tomorrow night. But any thoughts on just – let's stick with game three first, guys, and then I want to – because game four has a lot of conversation we can talk about. Bill, game three, let's walk us through that.
Two letters sum up game three, and it's KD, right?
Yeah.
Money at the end of the game. That three-pointer was insane and unbelievable to put them up by one, because they hadn't been ahead. They hadn't had the lead, Todd, at that point until how long? I mean, they didn't have the lead.
No.
So I don't think it was anything Cleveland did at the end of the game. I think it was Golden State exerting their will. And, you know, that three-pointer by KD was everything. It just kind of set a tone for the next, you know, minute and 25 seconds whenever he drained that thing. So,
you know, as he was dribbling the ball down the court, did you have any doubt he was going to take a three-pointer?
Not at all. Knew he would.
And you and I have played, I think, zero games combined in the NBA. and LeBron, like, just completely backed off of him and gave him, like, almost saying, take this three-pointer. It just was so weird that it just – I think I knew he was going to shoot the three-pointer, and then he pulls up and, you know, and then Mike Breen gives the bang, you know. And Todd, what was your thoughts on the way that game finished? Because that Cleveland crowd went from 100 to 1 like that.
Well, I think, you know, LeBron, he's our best player this year. I think Durant is 1A, maybe 2. But he obviously thought Durant was driving the ball, right? I mean, he doesn't give him that. He obviously – and I tip my hat to him. He's amazing. That said, I think it was the perfect storm of the power of Golden State versus the terrible misfortune of Cleveland. I mean, they missed so many – short shots, little layups, little bunnies. If one of those goes in, it's a totally different game. Uh-huh. And you have the power of Golden State just saying, you know, if you score, you don't score. We're going to come down and jack up a three or spread the floor and get an easy layup. And it's a testimonial to the professional athlete just never quitting. I mean,
yeah.
Golden State could have just said, oh, this is over. And they went on, what, a 13-0 run? Uh-huh. And I don't think Cleveland choked. I think they were going for the throat and trying to score, and for whatever reason, the basketball gods wouldn't let him score, and it ended how it ended game three. But boy, if you're Cleveland, you're scratching your head saying, what could have been, right? The segue moving forward to game four.
Yeah, because game four came, the Cleveland crowd came fired up, you know, not on our court, you know, you're not going to win it in our court. And we got you 3-1 down last year. And so if we can just get the 3-1 down this year, we got a chance, and, you know, getting their heads.
Don't forget stopping the streak. You mentioned that in a tweet or a text.
Yeah.
Being able to say, you know, not go deep, right? 16-0 on us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if nothing else, you know, you didn't go 16-0. Cleveland comes out with, I mean, it was almost like it wasn't even all-star game level of action. It was so unbelievable. J.R. Smith hits the three-pointer from deep to start the game. Warriors miss a few. It's 5-0. Then it's quickly 5-5. It was just an up-and-down pace, 49 points. And there was, I think the Cavs shot 18 free throws in the first quarter alone.
Yeah.
So the fact that it got to 49 is because the clock was stopped and points were being scored when the clock was stopped and the three-pointer onslaught. You know, take away the Cavs for a second. If I tell you that Golden State's going to score 118 points, they're going to shoot 61%.
And lose.
You'd be like, there's no way.
That's right.
I bet they cover the over, though. Sorry, I digress.
So, Todd, your thoughts on that blitzkrieg in the first quarter?
I think we texted back and forth a little bit. You know, the referees, how many fouls can be called, this and the other. At the end of the day, it's you tip your hat to Cleveland. They didn't roll over. It would have been very easy to roll over. We're down 3-0. Now they do have last year. They came back from 3-1. But I'm saying we're as human nature, you're down 3-0. And you lost game three the way you lost game three. You know, I fully take off my hat to Cleveland and say, you know, LeBron and the boys did what they had to do. And it wasn't even close, right? They came out big early and made a huge statement and had to make a statement. We're back in Oakland game five, right? It's
tomorrow night.
2-2. It's not a 2-3-2 anymore. You know, not to go ahead, but I fully expect Golden State to take care of business. I'm going to stick with they have too many weapons, and as good as LeBron is, KD's not that much far off, not that far off from LeBron, and he has more weapons. So I'm thinking Golden State wins
tomorrow. Let me just say this: a couple times in the game, Golden State went on a little run, and I don't think anyone I don't think anyone doubted that they could have come back. I mean, like I think people kept that game on because they kept expecting it to be a 5-point game. The next time they looked up.
Mm-hmm. ABC loves that, right?
The referees
for advertising dollars.
Yeah, the referees seem to make some big calls every time momentum would be starting to shift. It was a strange game. Refereeing was very suspect. There was a huge moment in the third quarter where Draymond Green got a technical foul, and you know everyone except the three referees on the court, everyone thought he was ejected. The scoring table,
Draymond,
TV, yep. Draymond, Kerr, LeBron. I mean, everyone. Mm-hmm. I think that was a horrible technical foul.
Van Gundy was going crazy, right?
And there was let's admit it. There were some technical fouls. The one on Love was a joke. Dante Jones from the bench. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It was a horribly refereed game, but that was a big moment, and it turns out to not matter, but it did matter for Game Five. I guess he wouldn't have been ejected from game five. He just would have, you know, turns out if he would have been ejected from that game, the game would have completely changed. But it did become a much more physical game for the last 17 or 18 minutes. There was a lot of elbows. There was a very rough pick set by LeBron on Steph Curry where he, you know, violently kind of knocked him to the ground. There was the skirmish between Iman Shumpert and Zsa Pachulia.
Yeah.
Kind of the swipe of the hand towards the man parts.
Sean, didn't your girlfriend in college wear Zsa Zsa Pachulia? No. I'm sorry, I digress.
The very physical foul on Kevin Love hitting Durant in the head. It was just a weird game that became very physical, and I think the referees were kept trying to get it under control, but they got it under control way too early in the game. Then it got out of control because they couldn't keep it in control.
Yeah. Are you guys shocked that they didn't call the first technical foul that I thought they did against Draymond Green? Like when I saw it in a replay, I'm like,
when he punched him in the throat?
Yeah, why wasn't that a technical?
Yeah, on the jump ball.
So I thought for sure he had two technicals. And then
that's what's funny, Todd, is because that's the moment where the jump ball happened.
Yeah.
He kind of pushed who was he pushing out of the way? He was pushing
Shumpert.
Shumpert out of the way, and Shumpert was acting like big time.
He's a good actor. Yeah,
but and then they called a foul on Draymond, and that's when Draymond was reacting to how can it be on me, and that's when they said they gave it to Kerr. But was surprising. But what were your thoughts on that whole fiasco with the technical non technical?
Yeah, that's doesn't look good for the NBA.
No.
Because it looked like they definitely protected.
And Van Gundy called them out on that.
Yeah,
Van Gundy really went off on that
big time because. You know, how could even the you mentioned the guy who the scores table who tracks the technical fouls?
Yeah,
Draymond had a technical, and you gave him a second one, so he's gone. So it looked bad, really bad. I'm sure. Look, there's whoever the head of officials for the NBA is. There was a little come to Jesus meeting about how that game was handled. I think you'll see a little bit different officiating in Golden State. I don't think the Cavs will shoot over 50% from the 3-point line.
24 threes.
Unbelievable. Yeah, 24 of 40-something. They were over 50% from the three-point line, whereas 40 is exceptional. They were over 50. I mean, it was an exhibition like we've never seen before. They set records for first quarter and first half scoring for an NBA final.
And Steph had his worst game of the series.
Which he always has one, right? There's always one where he's not really Steph. But I guarantee you we'll count it together and some, we'll send that text when it happens. He'll hit in the first, we'll call it the first half. He'll hit three threes where he has no right whatsoever to be throwing the ball up because he's not in any kind of shooting position and it'll go in.
Yeah.
What he does.
And I don't expect Tristan Thompson to have as good a game as he had.
Right.
I don't like him because he's a Duke guy, but Kyrie Irving's fun to watch. When he's got the ball, there's
great player. Yeah.
I don't really remember a point guard that could score the way he can.
Yeah.
He can take it to the rack with authority. You know, when Curry takes it to the rack, he's very sinewy.
He's kind of fluid.
Yeah. And he kind of puts it up with English and
finesse
and the little teardrops. Kyrie just
power.
He's fun to watch.
Well, yeah. Bill, you're a baseball guy, right? So if I'm so, Golden State, I'm not worried because you were 15 for 15.
Yeah.
You were due to either have a bad game or, I think, more importantly or more accurately, Cleveland just was lights out, right?
Yeah.
They were lights out early on. And
if you're a baseball guy, the Yankees had the Sox. The Yankees had the Sox down 3-0.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Sox went on to beat them and win the World Series in 04.
That was in 04.
You never know.
The reverse sweep.
It can happen. It can happen. But I'm not calling for it to happen. I'm just saying.
But I'm just saying, 15 for 15, Golden State, I'd chug it up. I'd be fine. Hey, we're due to run the muscle.
Eventually. My biggest complaint was LeBron goes to the line with 2 seconds left in the first quarter. He just makes them both. They score 50. He only gets one of two.
Yeah.
Really, LeBron.
I think they missed 9 free throws in that.
Exactly.
Question kind of comes up again, is the pressure on Golden State or is the pressure on Cleveland? I think we all agree pressure's on Cleveland.
It's all Cleveland.
All Cleveland. And Richard Jefferson was on and he has like a 90-second soundbite where he is really trying to sell the pressure's all on Golden State. And I wish the reporter would say, I'm out. I'm not buying.
Jefferson has to say that. That's his gig. That's his role with the team. He has to say that.
If Cleveland wins game 5, then the pressure shifts for sure, right?
I agree.
Yeah. Not all the way, but a little bit. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, because Golden State's already won in Cleveland.
I anticipate Cleveland's going to have the same game plan where they're going to try and be very physical.
Yep.
And get these guys get the shooters, especially Klay Thompson and little Steph Curry, get them physically rattled, try and get Draymond a technical quick.
Yep.
I mean, it's one of those things where you just say, we're going to give KD his 35. That's just, it's such a weird thing to say.
They have every game. So.
I know. Right. And LeBron, is going to be perhaps the first player to average a triple double in the finals. Wow. So, fun to watch, and I'm not an NBA fan, but I will watch the finals because it's just intriguing to see that and to follow on Twitter is great because every foul is a great call or a horrible call depending on who you see. I noticed that none of the Cleveland fans thought that the refs helped them win the game, but every Golden State fan felt the refs cost them the game. So.
Yeah.
Sean, you may have heard my sigh 30 seconds ago. At the 23-minute mark, USA was up 1-0 against Mexico. There has been an equalizer. It is now 1-1.
Yeah.
As soon as we get out of here, I'm going to go turn that on, the second TV. All right.
It's on FS1, Bill.
That's that's a good segue. Todd, before I find out what's happening this week, anything you want to pull out, any prison suicides, anything else you want to just find out about this week before we move on?
Well, you're digging deep, Sean. You're digging deep. Hopefully that was all edited out. Nothing? I'm good.
All right.
I was going to cover Bobby Stoops, but you got it. So
let's talk about your week, Todd. Tell us what you got coming up.
Very good week. Have a huge opportunity in one of my distributors, Macon. They're opening a don't want to bore the non-real estate audience, but they're opening one of our product lines or our competitors. So it's my job to convince them to open our line. So big early part of the week. And so let's hopefully we work hard and get it done.
And let's circle back on last week. How was the Mercedes Center? Was it pretty sweet?
It's looking good. It is looking good. I just got a little glimpse, but the unofficial word is the roof is closing and opening. So that's huge. And they have set a date for the demolition of the Georgia Dome. And they're originally keeping it open in case Mercedes-Benz wasn't going to open and they could play the football games in the Georgia Dome. So the fact that they set a demolition date is good news for the Mercedes-Benz Stadium to open up in a timely manner. So the great part of the construction, it's always on time and it's always on cost, right? Those are the two things.
Well, the next Atlanta Falcons game I watch, I will watch with pride, knowing that there's ASSA ABLOY doors and hardware in the building.
I'm pulling out my handkerchief and drying my eyes. Thank you for that, Sean.
No problem. Bill, tell me what you got going on in your week ahead, and tell us who's going to be guest 98 after Raj Kizar did a great job on episode 97 of The Real Estate Sessions, a great podcast with real estate agents from around the country.
Yeah, I've got Billy Ekofo
from
Century 21 Redwood, the whole Eddie and Sean and Nick and the gang, what they built down there in the nation's capital and the surrounding regions. You know, Sean, you were part of the crew that kind of had the inside scoop on what Brad and Peter Brewer and C21 had planned up for Billy back in at the Inman Connect event. So we talk about that. We talk a lot about, you know, being human. I think that's a really good way to put it with Billy. And so it's a really good episode. I'm super proud of it. That'll publish on Tuesday. And for me, we opened two new branches. I mentioned them before down in Fort Myers and Estero, still supporting those two branches. And I'm doing a lot of work with commercial brokerages this coming week, talking about online security, right? How we can be a little more secure with our email and those kinds of things. And so that's kind of my schedule for the week. How about you?
Good. Well, I have a home week. My wife and daughter are down in the University of South Carolina for orientation for Riley. So we are bacheloring it. Ryan and I are home. Going to have a work week at home, run him to a couple golf tournaments up in Cleveland on Tuesday. He plays in a 36-hole tournament here locally on Wednesday, Thursday. And then I am just really focusing on getting my business up and running. I don't have a travel gig until Inman Connect in August. So
good.
Yeah. Home life. And so I'll be able to get some exercise and go in the office and hit some range balls and spend some time with the kids. So should be good.
Awesome.
So on behalf of
real quick, before you wrap up, we need to utilize the Twitter new, the Stare Down Cast. I believe the U.S. Open's next week. We didn't even talk about it. So let's tweet during the week and share our opinions, right?
That's a great thing. And so once again, if you're listening to this, throw us a tweet out. We are new on the tweets. We'd love to have you follow us, and we will probably follow you back unless you're a robot or a stripper, and we might even follow you twice if you're a stripper. So once again, that is it's at Stare Down Cast.
Yep.
At Stare Down Cast, and that's where you can find at Sean Karp, at Todd Meiniger, and at Bill Risser. And so for Todd and Bill, I'm Sean Carpenter. Thanks for listening to the Stare Down.